Trust Rich.
Okay, now it's
okay, so that I call this June meeting of the Back Bay Haven Trust Ron versus the Word. All right. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming out. Those of you who are in Zoom land, thank you for dialing in. Those of you who made it down here, thank you for finding the location since we did change the place. It was a little bit hairy. We had some issues getting the video set up and getting the door unlocked, not in that order, but we got there eventually. So we got a fairly good-sized evening of fun tonight. We have a special announcement from our scholarship chair, but I will leave that excitement. And while he hasn't joined us yet, we've got a special guest presenter from Citizens for Responsible Lighting, who's going to Dark Sky International affiliated group based out of Norfolk, will be sharing their particular perspective on the night sky. Obviously, we're interested in dark skies for our hobby, but there's a lot of other reasons too, and he'll be sharing that with us. With that said, I'm going to go ahead and kick it over to the Vice President for the normal coverage of the next month's agenda.
Okay.
Do you want me to drive? Will you stand up there?
No, that's okay. All right. Click the OK bar, too. There we go. Now let's see if we can get you guys going. All right. Now I got to share the screen. I forgot. Wait a minute. Okay. All right, can everybody see the events for the month of June?
Yes.
I can zoom in a little bit more, too. What about that? Okay. Of course, our club meeting's today. This Saturday is Esther's Bat Mitzvah Star Party, and that's going to be, I'm not sure where it is exactly.
New Realm Brewing.
It's the where?
It's at New Realm Brewing.
New Realm Brewing. You know where that is? It's on General Booth Boulevard. It's very, very close to square here. Garden Stars on at 8:30. Science in Sci-Fi. I forget what that's about. I have to look it up.
I'll cover that one.
Martian.
It's a new topic, science and science fiction. We're doing partnering with 50 public libraries. This one's presenting on the good science and the not so good science at the Martian. If we have any stars or planets to look at, Mars should be up, which is topical. We'll try and do some observing after.
Chesapeake Central Library. So that's near the planetarium.
It is near the planetarium. Total coincidence.
Okay. Very good. And I'll back off on that if I can find the click. The clicky. Where's the clicky?
Uh-oh. It's different tab. It opened a new tab.
Oh, it did? All right.
Yeah.
I hate to do it that way.
No. Just click on where it says Events Night Sky Network, that tab in Chrome, the middle one up top.
Oh, okay.
Someone help get a millennial. Millennial, go help baby boomer Jeff.
I got this.
I got you.
I got this.
All right, we got, okay, Gen X. Gen X, help baby boomer.
I'm technically a millennial. Just barely.
I'm not that old, guys. I'm probably the oldest guy here, but I'm not that old.
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Can you beat 1964 graduation?
Your high school or college?
High school.
All right. Just well preserved.
Okay. Enigma Labs Skywatching, Juneteenth. Can't remember what that is. I signed it up, I think, myself.
So that's on the ocean front.
Yeah, ocean front. That's right.
At Ocean's Old. Enigma Labs, looking at it, they're we'll generously call them a SETI group.
Hmm.
So this might be an exciting time for all of us who always encounter some fun things at Boardwalk. So,
yeah, and I got a Boardwalk story to share with you. When it comes time to share observing, I got a Boardwalk astronomy story for you. Okay, now how do I get out of it? Okay, this thing's in the way. I get it. No wonder. This thing's in the way. All right. Now we're talking. Can I go back to this? Yeah, I got two of these guys open, don't I? Okay, Saturday, Sunday on the 14th, that's at Elizabeth River Park, a fun event. By the way, if anybody here doesn't know where any of these things are, stop me and I'll show you. This is all on our Night Sky Network, available for you guys to look at and sign up. What are we up to? Enigma Skywatch, that's at Northwest River Park, one of the largest outreaches we have, at least a dozen telescopes, sometimes more. And one time there was four sea stars there. I don't know, it was last, like 2 months ago. But it's a real, real fun event, and it's very near our president's house. So he can't miss that, right? Pride in the Peak. I don't remember that one. What's that about?
So that's a Chesapeake Pride event.
Okay.
At Chesapeake City Park this year.
Yeah, the City Park.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. So please sign up for any of these, and I can remind everybody, a week ahead of time, I'll send another report out to sign up, especially if we're low on volunteers. Horn Watch, that's a club-only event for astrophotography. Night Watch, Chip Oaks, same kind of thing at 8:30 p.m. I've never been to Night Watch, Chip Oaks, except for East Coast Star Party, so anybody has any experiences there, maybe you could share that too.
Hey, Jeff.
Yes.
I'm sorry, could you review what's the difference between a blue event, a green event, or a red event?
Yeah, the Corn Watch is,
he's the color codes. The red are public events, green are club only, and I think blue are special ones scheduled by specific people.
The green are club events only, that's right.
The blue are community events, and I'm really not sure the difference between club event.
Blue and red.
If you're doing an event part of a larger group, with a larger group, like Skywatch is our event. Where we're doing outreach. But if you're like a private feet, that's a community event.
Okay.
Okay.
That's supposed to be how you classify it.
So the blue is community?
Well, assuming they entered it right.
Yeah, we can mess that up too.
Yeah.
All right, let me jump ahead to July. July, we're having a picnic. We're not having a club meeting the first Thursday of the month. We're having a picnic, which is not on here. Here it is. On the 12th, family picnic at Elizabeth River Park also. That's tricky to get in there if you've never been to Elizabeth River Park. It's tricky to get in and out, in my opinion. Boardwalk Astronomy, again, number 3. And we had some experiences there, but I won't go into it right now. Meeting number 1, meeting number 2, they didn't know we were coming. That's the short version. And I don't know how, because George and I went and we nailed down the dates that day, face to face with the guy. So I don't know how he messed up the dates. Okay.
But the rest of them are good.
Yeah, the rest of them are good.
Sorry.
Question. Okay. I'm glad you found it.
No, we started.
Yes, please sign in, and so we'll know all the people. This is one of the largest meetings we've had in a long time, so I'm very delighted to see everybody here. Okay, we already talked about Skywatch, and that's at Northwest River Park, Chip Oaks. Okay, no, we didn't talk about it for July. Okay, Saturday, Sunday is the 5th, right after Independence Day, so I don't know how many people are going to show up there, but I hope we have a good crowd. Boardwalk Astronomy, again, number 3. Rooftop Astronomy, that's on top of a restaurant.
That's the Ghent Rooftop Bar.
Yeah. So that's going to be, we got some really good events coming up this time, so we need lots of volunteers to do that. This one has 40 visitors, so I can't remember. It says 3 volunteers needed. So or we could use some more, too. All right.
I need to do a site visit for research purposes only. Not just check out.
Now, the family picnic, we're going to send out a spreadsheet. What is it? A poll to find out how many people you want to bring and what food groups you're going to bring and stuff like that, because it's kind of a potluck slant. Okay, and I can see that Sean has a question or comment.
I was going to say we're going to use the Night Sky Network and Groups.io.
Okay.
So if you're not on Groups.io, you can just use the Night Sky Network and indicate or guess them what you're planning on bringing.
Okay, because I sent the reminder out, but it didn't have a poll for things, you know?
I'll make the document on the Groups.io. I'll make note of that.
All right, so we'll get that going, and that's always a big event. Let's see what else we got here besides the picnic. Again, Corn Watch and Sky Watch, and Corn Watch and Night Watch Chippos. So Sky Watch is the one at Northwest River Park, and Night Watch is the one at Chip Oaks. I just get a mix up myself. Any questions at all? While I'm up here.
I'm a non-member.
Oh,
this is my first meeting.
Good.
I'm interested in just describe one of those events.
Sure. Let's talk about Boardwalk Astronomy real fast. Now, last time, Boardwalk Astronomy, gosh, we had 7 or 8 telescopes, lots of telescopes. I had my smart telescope, and I projected an image for the first time on the wall there, and I had a lot of people come up and ask me, and I had some funny stories, too. Now, let me give you a 30-second worth of funny story. This little 6-year-old kid comes up. Can I ask you a question? Yes, you can. Sure. What's a black hole? And have you ever seen one? As a matter of fact, I had a picture of Cygnus A in my thing, and so I put Cygnus A. Well, this, it's really a star, but it's circling the black hole. You know, and so he kind of understood that. And he said, what about a white? Can I ask you a question? Again, with can I ask you a question? What about a white hole? You know, so we get a lot of activity, a lot of interest. So you can't put those people off and laugh. You just have to you take it with a grain of salt and you say, oh yes, here's what I know about it. And it was a lot of fun. I thought that was a very, very good experience for him and for us.
Those were better questions than I got. Is the Earth flat? Did we really land on the moon? How do we know those are actually planets up there?
We had a guy on a skateboard last month. He came by and said, the Earth is flat. The Earth is flat. Right. So he was drawing some attention.
I assured him the flat Earth movement is sweeping.
Yeah. So Boardwalk Astronomy is on the 24th Street boardwalk there, right beside the Coast Guard station. Coast Guard? No. What do they call it? The Coast Guard? It's the lifeguard station.
Life saving surf museum,
yeah. And it's right by the band where the band was blasting us last time, too.
Yeah, 24th Street
Stage.
Yeah.
We're going to have, according to the event folks, we're going to have live music for the rest of the summer. So
good.
Come on out and show off the stars. Get your groove on. We had people from all over the country. We had a lady who was down from New York, having brought her parents over from Kyrgyzstan to show them Virginia Beach, and they also got to see the moon and Mars, which was fun for everybody. We had Norwegians, we had French folks, we had people from Indiana, Wisconsin. It was a great time. A lot of music. Probably 300.
The guys from Turkey came again this
one. Oh, okay.
He came, if that's the second time.
We had another person.
We had a gal on stilts.
Oh, yeah.
We had girls on roller skates that were able to look through the telescope.
While she was on roller skates or not?
Well,
yeah. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. Please do come out and help us as well as observe too. All right. Questions on anything?
Come on. Do you have the presentation?
Okay. I will go back and stop share and turn it right back over to Jeremy.
All right. Since our guest presenter just arrived, I'm going to go ahead and shift gears, call an audible on our schedule. So with that said, I'm going to try and figure out how to share the screen and not embarrass myself. Maybe. Joining us tonight is
Jeremy.
Are we,
because of the timeline, I'm not sure we're going to stay.
Not right yet.
Yeah, so don't change too much.
Okay, fair enough. Can I beg your indulgence for a little? We have a scholarship that we're presenting.
Perfect.
This evening.
Present a scholarship.
All right. Sorry about that. Good call. Am I sharing still or no?
No.
Okay, great. All right. Sure. Ben, would you like to introduce?
All right. So, a little background. My name is Ben Loyola, chairman of the Scholarship Committee for Back Bay Amateur Astronomers. Our organization, and welcome new folks. We'll do some introductions here, a little bit of kind of things we're showing you here tonight. We are a 501c3, which is an educational organization for tax purposes. So you please contribute to our club. Your companies, your employers can contribute to our club. And it's a tax deductible donation and supports our educational outreach capabilities. So as part of that, we established a decade ago now a scholarship fund, and it's grown to $3,500, which is an amazing amount of money that we give out for the size of our organization, which is about 100-something folks.
About 180, although I think Rich is going to give us
that. Yeah, so that's
183.
There you go. So it's an amazing amount of money for relatively a small organization. A lot of organizations have much lower scholarships and many more hundreds of people. But in any case, so just a little background. We send that out throughout Hampton Roads, Chesapeake, Norfolk, South, Eastern Shore, whatever. And then our application, and it closes on May 1st. The students, candidates, write a 500-word essay, and they get a teacher's recommendation, as well as we grade their SAT, ACT score, and GPA. That goes into our score sheet. And the committee made up of Matt, say hello, Matt McLaughlin, and George. Did George not make it tonight?
George didn't make it.
Okay, great. And George and myself, we compile all we review all the applicants, and then we score them, and then we just rank them. So actually this year, we had three scholarships to give out, and one of them was Nick Anderson, but that one is a memorial scholarship, but that was being run by the City of Virginia Beach, and they're notifying that candidate directly. But our in-house Back Bay Amateur Astronomers scholarship consists of two scholarships. One is our core scholarship, and that's $2,000. And then our Georgie June Memorial Scholarship, and Georgie June was a wonderful member, just like we all are, but just gave so much outreach, was always a public event and everything, and sadly we lost her too early in life. And so we memorialized her service to the club and to the community by establishing a scholarship in her name. And so that's also worth this year. So with that, I am proud to announce that the recipient of both our BBAA, Back Bay Amateur Astronomer Scholarship, as well as the Georgie June Memorial Scholarship is Mia Desha Candy Chase. So come on up. High school. You can tell us a little about yourself, but as one of the things, it's a selfish thing that we do, is we like for them to read their 500-word essay. So we'll have her do that live for everybody here. And normally we would present the check tonight. However, she responded so quickly, very astute, that she beat us to Rich, our treasurer, so you can blame Rich. He can't be here, he's universally. So we're going to present the letter. Well, I was going to mail, but you'll get the letter that basically acknowledging your recipient. And check's in the mail, right, Rich?
It will be.
By the way, I can turn over to you and then tell us a little about yourself, and then please use your essay. There it is right there.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mia DeHessa. It's nice to meet you guys. I go to Princess Anne High School. I'm in the IB program, and I'm graduating this year. Senior day. but I'm going to William & Mary next year. And I'm not exactly decided about my major, but right now I do want to do, but I might also do physics and go into astronomy. I'm not sure yet.
Okay, science is science.
Science is science, yes. Anything in STEM, that's for me. I'll be trying to say that now. It was a weekday during the height of COVID as I prepared for another long, boring day of virtual classes as the Zoom link loaded onto my screen, when I sighed in anticipation of my incoming boredom. My teacher introduced himself and walked his syllabus as he gave us a brief overview of our coursework for the rest of the year. He explained that we would start material lessons describing the life of a star, or rather, the lives of a star. From dense neutron stars to red supergiants with explosive supernova, he showed us how the size and temperature of a star can determine its future and decide if it will end in flames or darkness. The boredom I expected that day never came. Instead, I found my eyes glued to the screen, hanging on to every word my teacher said as he described the life cycles of different stars. On the inconspicuous midwinter day, a different kind of star was born. A star whose light reflected my newfound passion for astronomy. This passion followed me into high school, where I'd taken an astronomy class through PAHS and two dance schooling moments called Christmas all of which I've written in. My first dual enrollment astronomy course was MEF 100, Introduction to Engineering Technology, and was taken to the Virginia Aerospace and Science Technology Scholarship. I had classes for a technical report every 2 weeks and I give it a call.
They lost the audio.
Oh.
Are you hearing it?
Barely.
Okay, it's just... Okay, sorry.
Because Gabriel texted us and said that he lost audio.
Here we go.
Can you hear it, Rich?
Much better.
There you go. All right.
Sorry. Okay.
No problem.
Virtual membership.
Okay. Such prompts included an annotated bibliography on the Challenger explosion's causes, research on methods of finding exoplanets, and designing a long-duration experiment intended to be completed during spaceflight. For the latter prompt, I designed an experiment that sought to measure how levels of bone marrow fat and hemolysis rates fluctuate over time as a result of microgravity. In this report, I discussed the experiment's connection with the Mars Exploration Program Analysis Group goals, as well as different tools that would be used for the experiment, including complete blood count tests, dual energy X-ray absorptionometry scans, and bone marrow aspirations. At the end of the course, I completed a final project where I designed a hypothetical mission to Mars. It was named the She-Wolf after the wolf in the tale of Romulus and Remus. And the experiment would explore Tharsis, a volcanic region located in Mars's western hemisphere, to look for past geological activity and signs of life in the Martian regolith. In this report, I selected a crew of astronauts, stakeholders, and designed a Martian base using the 3D modeling software Tinkercad. Due to my success in this course, I was accepted into the program Summer Academy and MEC 195 Introduction to Aerospace course and was chosen as the second command of my group, Human Factors, and was selected to speak at the closing ceremony. Over the week-long academy, I led my group in designing a 3D modeled base, creating food and water budgets, and creating psychological resources for astronauts before, during, and after flight for a hypothetical mission to Mars.
Amazing.
You see, the pool of candidates, amazingly talented, intelligent, accomplished, leadership skills, and everything. So on behalf of Back Bay Amateur Astronomers, I'm very proud to present the letter acknowledging your $3,500 scholarship. Congratulations. Wish you all success in your career and in your future. And thank you so much for applying.
Thank you.
Wish you the very best. And the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. So, Mom, congratulations. That's beautiful. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Check for mail, Rich.
Rich is good at that.
All right. He is. He's a great treasure.
So thank
you.
You
may leave because we understand. We're going to go on for a while.
You're perfectly welcome to stay. And without further ado, I would also like to go ahead and introduce our other guest for the evening, Mr. Joe Raines. Did I pronounce him? Yeah. Major General, United States Air Force. He's a representative with us tonight from the Citizens Responsible Lighting, Dark Sky Affiliate Network, but focused specifically on lighting issues in the area around here. I had the privilege of listening to him speak about a month and a half ago at the Beekeepers Guild meeting.
Yeah.
And he and his group were kind enough to agree to join us. So I am going to set up his presentation. Do you want me to drive slides or do you want to
drive slides? You can drive slides. I'm going to... Or if you have it there, I can drive and I can look at some of my notes.
Sure.
As he gets that set and gets up, let me... Who has seen that before in their life? And the sad part is, they haven't. I own land in Wyoming, too. It's Bortles Zero. I go out there every summer, and I land near a cot, and that's what I see. But we've lost that for them. We've lost it for my grandsons. They get to see it when they go out to Wyoming, but they don't see it in North Carolina. And I think that that's sad, and that's something that we all need to think about. If you go to the next slide, what I'm going to talk to you, and we've done something besides polluting our world over the last 100 years, we've actually polluted it with light too. And it's bad. It's not the way our bodies were designed. And you go, how do you know that? And I go, well, I'm a pilot, had 3,500 hours in, by myself in single seat fighters, another couple thousand in multi-seat either helicopters or bigger aircraft when I was on the operational test side. And the interesting thing, anybody serving the Navy in here? Okay, what do you guys do when you're in the command and control room and it gets night outside and you're going to have to transfer back and forth?
Rig for black.
You go to rig for black or rig for dark, and you go to red lights. Okay. If it's blue, that's bad because you can't go in and out. But if it's red, you can transition out. As a guy who got about 1,500 hours of flying at night, some in combat, some not combat, we go to red. And it starts when we come in to start briefing. So we spend an hour and a half under red armor, amber lights. So the transition is tonight. And then we go out in the night and we stay away from any lights. We put on our NVGs, which is kind of a green light, but it's a land amplification. And then we go fly. And I spend a lot of time looking outside. And our bodies adapt. It's the most wonderful machine in the world, how quickly our eyes adapt to the darkness and we can actually see. And that's the way it's designed. Unfortunately, as you'll see here, and we'll see some of the things we'll go through, is we've kind of got lost and thought that day equals being able to see. And light means being able to see. So what we've done is we've done three things. We've over-illuminated. We've over-colored. And we've over-distributed. And I want you to think about that, because light effects should be defined by three things: illumination, color, and distribution. And you're going to see when we go out that no light program in the United States, I shouldn't say, because there's a couple of cities that are now doing it, was actually designed on where lighting affects. The effect that you want should be desired. What happens is we put lights up where telephone poles were and at the distribution of side of buildings. And then we didn't care if the light went up, down, or sideways. And that's what we have in our country right now. That fascination, if you want to think about it, I'm going to steal these because they want me to come up cover some of the points. I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss any. You can go to the next slide. This is one you guys had a different.
I think, yeah, the version we have doesn't seem to have all the same.
Same slides as you have?
That's,
okay, you know what? Maybe I can brief to what slides they send me. So right there, you can see right there artificial light has had to change up. Anybody also see the gas lights that are down in Freemason? Ever walk down in Freemason? You've seen the gas lights there, right? The natural gas lights. Man, you know what I'm talking about. Is they put out about one lumen at 15 feet. Not very bright. Less than a flashlight. And their color, if you want to think about their color is about 1,200 Kelvin. That's really, really warm. And really, really low on the Kelvin scale. But guess what? You can walk between those lights, and you can see the sidewalk, and you can see the body is used to it, and you can work it. We have done that. We've overdone that. So next slide. Oh, I'm going to make you busy now.
That's okay.
Do that. And everybody's heard, I kind of alluded to, the circadian rhythm is our ability to be awake and then sleep, rest, recover, be awake to do the same thing. Who remembers, now you guys, I hope you can be with us. When I went to physics, which I love physics, you learned about Roy G. Biv. Mm-hmm. Everybody here nods their head. I find it a lot younger people, not as much. But Roy G. Biv was red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. And that violet is up at that high Kelvin, which is called a cooler color. And we want the warmer colors down at the bottom, which are the amber colors. But in that circadian rhythm, the thing that happens is, guess what happens in the morning? What do you see? You see that reversal of dark to light, and that light drives that. So what you usually see is you'll usually see a red, and then at the sky when it's just breaking, then that turn to orange. And that yellow comes quickly and snaps through, and you go right into the bright light in blue. And that blue, that sequence is a signal to our brains to do what? Stop producing melatonin, start producing serotonin, wake up, get ready to fight, do what you're going to do that day. That circadian rhythm is important for us. What happens at the end of the day? Same thing, except in reverse. Yellow, orange, red. That's that signal to your brain to do the complete opposite, which is produce melatonin, stop the serotonin, and get your body prepared to sleep and rest. So God, well, or a super being, depending on who you are. I'm Catholic. I have to think it's God. Has set this up in such a beautiful way that our bodies work this way. And this is how it works. Oh, as we talked, if you go to the next slide. So are animals, and the animals we see. Most of the animals in our environment are what? Nocturnal. So when we put up lights that are, like in Ghent right now, are 7,000 Kelvin and are 1,000 times over the illumination requirements of the Department of Transportation, we're confusing everybody. We're confusing ourselves. We're confusing the animals. We're confusing the birds. Next slide. It also comes into also pollinators, and that we found that since we've had the bigger increase of light, and our light increase hasn't been one of these gradual things. It has been kind of a little bit of gradual through the 1930s, 1940s. Since the 1940s and 50s, we have gone off the chart. We're climbing at 60 degrees to 80 degrees nose high, and we're going to pass through unknown spectrums quickly. And it's something that the biggest violators are people who don't know they're violating it, but they go and buy a 5,000 Kelvin light with three times they go for the wattage, so it's 3 to 5 times the wattage of what they need, because they grew up saying, I need a 60-watt bulb on my outside. And they don't understand the physics behind it, nor do we. Next slide. And I'll give a little bit of that. Now I'll jump in right now, and then we'll go to bird migrations. I was involved as the ACCIG in doing the project to help look at whether we want to bring LED lights on. And it was great savings. LEDs, you're going to see me. I am not against LEDs. I'm for the right LED at the right place for the right effect. And what we did is we put new lights in at Langley for the F-22s that were coming in. I helped supervise that program as I was doing other, trying to find out where we'd moved nukes that we weren't supposed to move. Everybody remembers that song and dance. But we put those lights in 2007. They're still burning perfectly. So when you put an LED light in, you put it in for a long, long, long time. It's not something you're going to change because that's an expense. And you're going to change it when you spend money. Well, we already talked about the LEDs and how they're bright and how that's a change. This is affecting bird migration, which takes place at night, and that ties into the nocturnal animals we had just before. Next slide. I'm going to have to give Liz a hard time because we changed the order a little bit. This right here on the left, that's birds just in Norfolk. They had collected one night. Right, and the interesting part is that was under a low haze right after they changed the waterside, the lights along watersides. If you've been along waterside right now, you'll notice they're all LEDs, and they're all at 4,800 to 5,600 Kelvin, which is way above where they should be. And the illumination is, unfortunately, it's about 5 to 10 times the required requirement for where the VDOT says the standard is. This one right here on the right, and I think most of you probably read about this, that's the, in New York City, that's the light illumination for the Twin Towers they put up to put as a memorial. What they find out happened on low clouds, different nights, the birds got lost around the lights and kept going around the lights until they tired themselves out, fell to the ground. They killed one night a close to about 7,000 birds. Now what they do is during bird migration, they cut the lights. They'll have the lights on for about 5 or 10 minutes as it gets dark, after sunset, then they turn the lights off. And then after, as it comes before just morning, they turn the lights on. So they understand the effect and they're trying to work around it. We sometimes don't think about these things. It's a, as you know, it's the second and third order effects that usually cause the big problems. Okay, next slide. That's downtown Norfolk as of 5 years ago. I contend right now that it's a little bit brighter, especially down along the waterside, but that's probably brighter than it needs to be and brighter than we would like it to be. Next slide. There's the United States. This slide is 10 years old. We have grown a lot brighter since then. I have not gone to space. Hopefully you all will get the chance. Up to 82,000 feet. Now it's pretty close, but it was not dark. But I have flown at night at 50, 60,000 feet. And you can see all of the Milky Way. And you can also look down and you can see your find your way around because of all the lights we have now. You hardly almost don't need navigational lights. But right up here, if you will see, there is this little 400-acre place that I call Getaway, and it is border zero. And you can't see those lights. But why do we have to go to Northern Wyoming to do that? We should be able to do it anywhere we want. Next slide. Here's what, and I'll give you a quick 30 seconds. The Citizens for Responsible Lighting, you're going, why did a pilot get involved in this? What were you doing, sir? But, you know, I was at a GNL meeting, and a good friend of mine, Liz Pace, along with Mary Frances Bellman, came to brief that night. Now, Mary Frances Bellman just happened to be the first person that they put a 6,000 Kelvin light with about 30 times the illumination required just outside her bedroom window that day. Not that day, but a couple months before. So she was the first one that got the effect of the change to LED lights. And she and her husband thought when the lights went down and they came in that somebody had turned the spotlight on in their bedroom. So she was the one that actually started this group just asking the city questions. What's going on? Why are we doing it? Do we get a choice? Do we not get a choice? Who's in charge of this? What are the designed effects? So she started that. A bunch of us jumped in. I jumped in once I learned about it and started talking to them about effects that I tested in Iraq and in Afghanistan, where we actually want dark on our bases at night so we can operate and we can move around because we design the light so that we can move, but the enemy can't see on the base. The object is to deny the enemy the ability to see my base and what I'm doing, while I can see them outside and they can't see me. So lobbying for healthier LEDs is our first part. We've partnered with both the Audubon Society and Dark Sky. And Dark Sky kind of rolls into this because of what they're thinking of and where we want to be. And that's to design the light for the need you have and for the requirement you have, not just turn on a flashlight that's 30 times more than you need. What, in fact, if you want to think about saving money besides LEDs, that saves a lot of money because you're not throwing electricity through that fixture. And we want Norfolk to hire experts. We want them to actually design the lighting effect we want for the city we want, not just replace a light on every pole. And what the Dominion Energy answer and Norfolk's original answer was, hey, we're just going to take out a light at every spot. We're going to put in an LED that's 4,000 Kelvin and is 4 times the illumination required for setup by VDOT. It wasn't a thoughtful process. It was just a plug and play. Because it was easy, it was cheap, and we could do it. So we've been working with city personnel. And we've made a promise to ourselves. We're always going to try to stay positive. We're going to work with the city. We're going to tell them where the good things are. And what we don't want to become is California. Davis, California was one of the first cities to convert all their lights to LEDs. That time it was 5,000 to 5,500 LEDs. Within a year, guess what they did? Pulled all those LEDs lights out and replaced them with lower Kelvin, lower Illum lights. That was pretty expensive cost, somewhere around $5 million is things that we found. I don't know about you, we don't have that extra money. I'm now chief executive officer at the MacArthur. Please send it to us because we need a building picture. And then what we did is, the good part is we requested a pause on the conversion, and they agreed to pause wherever a light didn't burn out. But if a light burned out, then we're going to go ahead with the conversion. And that still continued, but they stayed with us. And then we wanted to partner, and we have partnered with Dominion Energy, to partner with us to work forward. When we first started talking with Dominion Energy, they said, no way. This is what you get. This is what's available. You know, these other two cities in Virginia have already done that. They don't have a problem. You guys need to get on board. First of all, we'd like to educate you. We'd like to talk to you. We'd like to understand where you're coming from. Is it your desire? Because in their booklet, they say they want to be an eco-friendly company. Is it your desire to be eco-friendly and light-friendly? And they said, yes, it is. So we've worked with them. But they've been slow to move because they have invested money and time and thought into this conversion and this requirement. And I'm a board member on several boards. I understand that. You better get it right than get it. And that's the biggest thing I've learned about being a board. If you get it wrong, the stockholders will ask you to figure out a way to pay it back. So that's kind of where we're going. But we do believe in LEDs. Next slide. And these are some of the reasons. I won't go through all these. We've kind of covered some of them. The key part that I worry about is the second and third order effects. Just like I talked to you about on the lights I put in, helped put in at Langley, they're still going. And we originally thought they were only going to last for 5 years. And at that Kelvin where they are and that illumination where they are, I don't think we know what the effects are. Doctors said originally that 4,000 to 5,000 was all right. But that was in 2016, 2017. Since then, they said, hey, anything above 3,000 is probably not good for you, especially over the long term. We're really fighting to get them down to 2,700. But I got to admit, I don't know if we've caught, the science has caught up with the technology. And all of us that a little grayer hair, a little older, have seen that in our lives where we jump into the technology and we're not exactly sure the technology is mature enough to be where we need it. And that's that second and third order effects that come to hit you. Next slide. You'll hear about blue haze. You can see some of the things there. How many people have been writing down 64 now to do high intensity? Those are 4,000 to 6,000 Kelvin lights. But more importantly, they're 5 times the illumination you used to have on I-64 when you come in through Yorktown to Hampton. Have you seen that where you get that haze and you go, man, That is your eyes unable to react fast enough to be able to open up because your eyes are seeing it's dark. Now, oh no, it's so bright, so I have to close. And then there, you go out of that, and then you come back into it. Your eyes are not adapting fast enough. And that's that second and third order effect of just not preparing the lights in the right sequence or for the right effect. Next slide. My favorite slide, Roy G. Biv gets to live again as we go. And that's something to always remember. We really think, especially around, and Norfolk is an area around a lot of water. We really think as you're going to be close to wildlife at night, you need to probably be no higher than 2,000, 2,200. The state is now recommending 2,300. Again, I'm not sure that's totally right, but it's better than 4,000. And for most of the lights we're talking about, we'd like to have it around 2,700, and then we're working that way. And this kind of explains some of that and why it's there. And you'll see here that that 3,000 and greater is typical of sunlight or overhead. And that 3,000 is, if you go out and want to protect people in Ghent, get to see me out under lights all the time with my voltmeter and my light meter, testing lights and doing stuff. That 3,000 is in the first 45 minutes to hour after the sun comes up, if it's a clear day. But it drives the sun to get that blue color that we naturally call that Carolina blue sky or the beautiful blue sky, whichever one you want to do it, Air Force do it. To get that, it's going to be around 5,500 and above. So that gives you an idea of where those colors come from and what you see. Next slide. This is, I kind of jumped ahead in some of this. This kind of talks about the unhealthy effects of Kelvin lights and where they are. It doesn't take much blue light. Here you see 3,000. It does depend on the fixture and the illumination brightness. But its rate is so close, it ranges from 19 to 25 at the 3,000 Kelvin lights. That's still a lot. That's enough that if you're looking at that light, it's almost like looking at your television or your LED, your screen on your iPad or phone within 30 minutes, an hour of going to sleep. Your brain just can't stop fast enough. It needs time to be able to go, oh, it really is yellow, orange, red, and it is time to go to sleep. Versus trying to fight yourself to doing it. Next slide. Different light types of light trigger different psychological effects. Again, we want the orange, amber light triggers the melatonin and helps us sleep at night. Next slide. Why is melatonin important? Other than giving you sleep, who likes a good night's sleep? I love a good night's sleep. I used to. When I was flying, I loved it because the Air Force said I had to get 8 hours of sleep. I love that. You can't necessarily do that in the real world, but these are things that are being right now seen that are attributable to a higher Kelvin, higher illumination light. Look at that list. There's a lot of things on there that nobody would have thought about 5 years ago. In fact, it's hard to convince. We had several groups that say they don't believe it. And I go, well, if you believe the CDC, which they are scientists dedicated to it, I worked on them on chemical weapons and other things. They are not bad people. They're trying to do the best job they can. And this is the information that they're coming up with. So I believe in the science. Next slide. And you've all seen this. We just kind of led into it. The blue light at night artificially extends the day and disrupts your circadian rhythm for all living animals, not just you. Next slide. This is where I think you'll be more interested. And if you haven't, I'm a walker. So I get out at night after I'm up early in the morning at 5:30 and I start walking. That's from growing up on a farm. And then that's at night. I walk about 7 to 9 because I get to listen to the Yankees. And walk at the same time. But I started taking a look at the light. You can see right here in this picture the higher Kelvin lights going to the lower Kelvin and warmer lights. And you can see the distribution change of the pattern from that first to second light. That's where the lights have been changed. And you can see the dramatic difference right there. Next slide. And that's right here in Colonial Place. This is an interesting one. And it's just come out in the last year. Two tadpoles at conception were placed under different lighting conditions. The one on the right was a higher Kelvin light, and it didn't allow for a change for them to have rest. And the one on the left is a tadpole that was had a normal, what we would call a normal circadian rhythm. And that's just in several months what the effect is. This is the part that I think we should all be a little scared of. We don't know what the effect is on us, because we'll study that in 10 or 15 years from now. And that's where I think we need to be thoughtful of what we do and how we do it. Because one thing about physics, it never lies and it always repeats itself. Next slide. This is you can see one of the pictures I did. This light replaced a 2200 high-pressure sodium with a LED that is at 38 Kelvin. And you can see right there, it's kind of bright. Even in this picture, it's kind of bright. And you go, man, that's kind of hard. When you're out there standing next to that light on Freemason, it is hard to look at the light for more than 5 or 6 hours. You just can't do it. You start to get a headache. That's what's happening. And what's really hard is you can see the people living right behind it. They're doing the Mary Frances repeat over and over again every night with that same light. Next slide. We already talked about most of this, but the American Medical Association states, again, that increasing the light and the disability glare will cause problems. We don't know what those problems are right now. We haven't studied them a lot, but the key part, and we already talked about it, is your eyes can't adapt. They can't change the way they were naturally designed to work in an environment where the lights are like this. And that is over 4,000 Kelvin. But I think the key part of this one was the illumination was like 50 times what was required. And you can kind of see that right there at how bright the light is. And you can see how bright the street is. And what's the effect you're going for? I don't think they had a design effect. They just plugged and played. Next slide. This is an interesting one, how temporarily blinded a short blue light can be. There's a bright light in your face that's there. You see how you can't even see? You can see the legs of the individual right there. All they did for that light was take it from expanded view. This goes into the distribution part. So it was expanded here to turn it down. And you can see the difference right there. Still too much light. Still too bright. Still too, the color's still too warm, but it's better than if you had that first light you see on the left where you get the glare. Next slide. And I know that's through a camera. Someone told me, they go, well, that's just through a camera. And they said, a camera lens is different than a human lens. And I said, boy, that's not true. My physics teacher would argue with you all day long. That is just an adaption of what our eye does. And our eye has to do it by our processes that we have in our body. This is an interesting one, too. We get a lot of people who say, we've got to have bright white light. And I'm going to pick on the young people in the room right now. When I go around and I talk to people who are walking on the street, almost everyone below 30 says, hey, brighter and whiter is better. And I said, why is that? They go, well, our whole life, brighter and lighter is better. You know, we go to Disney and it's all bright. We go here and it's all bright. It's got to be good. And then we start talking about it, and that's when they realize that bright and white needs to be in the effect that it's designed for. They also talk about, hey, we need bright lights to be safe. We're going to get robbed if we don't have bright lights. There's going to be an increase in homicides. There is zero evidence through the FBI or through any one of the states or going to Europol, any evidence that bright lights have any factors on crime. What they do think is on crime is when do most robberies happen?
Night.
Not true. And most people say that. Most people say not. Between 1 and 4 in the afternoon. That's where the majority of all robberies happen. Now, most assaults happen late at night. And as my grandmother once said, nothing good happens after midnight. Most assaults happen after midnight. So that's something always to think about, where you are, what you're doing in the environment. It has nothing to do with life. It has everything to do with the environment you're in and the conditions you're in. And the reason I say that is you can't see the guy on the left right here. That was kind of before we did our air bases the correct way. This is this is what they were getting to see. They were getting to see us in a lighted area and being able to target us with snipers. This is what we did to them. We turned the lights out, flooded them on the outside. They had to look through light. We were down around 1,200, 1,300 Kelvin and about the lowest illumination that anybody could stand. Next slide. Same thing, brighter isn't always better. You can see the man there. He's now hidden in the shadows. Same light, just changing it. Next slide. I know we're not going to get to it. Here's that acorn on the left side. It emits too much light above. There's too much up light on the bug ratio. That's off the charts. This is not great because it's too much illumination, and I'm just cutting it off right there. This is about the same. I mean, this kind of light is better, but it's still not for the design effect, and I disagree with the ladies. That's not the best light. I think the best light is somewhere in between there that is usable at the right illumination, the right distribution, and the right color. For me right now, I think that's got to be around 2,300. It's got to be about 1 to 2 foot candles out at 15 feet. And the distribution is a dispersed distribution in what's called type 3. And it disperses it out, and it's more like what you would see on a hazy day, that kind of light that pushes through the clouds above. Next slide. Here's our five principles we live by that we want to think about, and you've kind of heard this a lot. Is it useful? Is it the right light at the right place? Is it targeted? Is it where it's needed? Is it at the low enough level, minimal low enough level, to be able to do the effect that it's designed to do? And then can you control it? I think that that's an add-on. The technology's there. It is a little more expensive to be adaptive controls on the lights, but we're talking right now in a picture. It's less than 5% more than the total cost of the picture. So if you're spending $500 on a picture, you know, we're talking about another $25 to get an adaptive control. And then, again, as we have already mentioned, or at least I've said a million times, choose the warm color, the natural color that we were born in, we should be living on. Next slide. These are some of the neat ones. That's a before. I can't remember the Kelvin. It's pretty high, but the illumination was off the chart, and you can see distribution is terrible. Bad. It's just a full open screen. You can see the one afterwards. And it's actually interesting. Is see how well the whole ground is lit? That's a better distribution ground, dispersed distribution. It's a lower color. And the better part, I think, the lens and our eyes capture is we can adapt to it and focus to it since it's so bright. What happens is our eyes go, oh my gosh, it's way bright. I got to close down. And when I close down, I don't get clarity. I don't get the depth perception. Next slide. Here's the critical window of opportunity that we've been pushing. Dominion Energy has chosen 3,000 and 4,000 for our streets. You can see that we emit some more blue light than we think is right. But more importantly, and I know that's hard for me. I love my sisters on this, but they are not, let's just say they don't have a good STEM background, and they don't necessarily track when we talk about illumination per square feet or illumination at 15 feet. So they don't like to put up the illumination part. And they keep taking it out after I sweep it in. But it's the illumination part that is just as important as the distribution of the color. It really is. And we can't lose sight of that. So we think we would recommend in neighborhoods 2,700 and lower for right now because we don't know what the right answer is. But we do need to step with technology. And 2,200 or lower for wetlands and wildlife areas. And then zero uplighting. Because that will give us back a little better view of the sky, and then adaptive controls. Next slide. Your voice matters. Please, please, please. In fact, I will send to you the city kind of sneakily just sent out a link 4 days ago, and they're going to give us about 3 more days before they do it. They said, hey, if you guys got any complaints against the new lights, the pilot testing, please say anything. It was on a very back link at the bottom of a page that had 0 hits right now. We found it today, and we've already got about 2,000 hits on it. So we want to let them know what we actually think about what they're doing. And I don't care if you vote yes, no, or different. Just vote. Okay. So these are the things that we think we need to hire somebody. And I know people are against experts right now. I actually believe experts are important. You know, Aristotle said that you learn knowledge from books and reading and listening. But it's knowledge plus experience, the life you live, which gives you wisdom. And I think he's got a point there. I used to not only believe the things my grandfather and father said until I actually got halfway doing the things they were doing. And then I said, you know, they were pretty smart guys. Actually, they're pretty experienced guys. Next slide. We add this in because of the disappearing fireflies and some of the other birds. We need to protect our habitat just as we protect ourselves. Next slide. Here we are on social media. On our Facebook page, you can find some AI-assisted articles I've written and some other articles, but you can also talk to us on crl.notebook@gmail.com, and we will answer you, and hopefully we'll have some questions and answers right now, but we're open up to the discussion. I think the discussion makes us all better and makes the city better. Next slide. Those are additional links if you want to go look about safety and crime, or you want to look about the state and the science report, or dark skies wedge paint. You're going to hear a lot of people, I'm going to throw a term at you, you're going to hear a lot about cities big on using this right now, some of the city managers. It's dark skies friendly. And I said, hey, what's that? What's the definition of friendly? Well, it's friendly. We don't need all the things, but we need some of the things. Actually, it's none of the things, but they're trying to say that they're kind of moving that way, but they haven't moved that way. But hey, let's not be a road bump. Let's all sing Kumbaya together and walk down the street. We have to listen to the words. Words are important, especially when they put them into law. So thank you for that. Next slide. And that is it, except I'll just say again, I'd love for all your grandsons, and I'd love for your grandsons and your grandsons to be able to see that light, because there's nothing more special than the Milky Way, especially with shooting stars and other things going on at night, at least to me. Okay, I'm over.
Coming out and joining us. Well, that would be funny. But first of all, since you joined us, hey, it's Jerry to the lander, and I tried to match the airport blue. Thank you so much for joining us. But with we're the back amateur astronomer, so we're obviously also strongly in favor of good quality lighting, ideally something that doesn't interfere with us from our observing field. We've had limited success in getting that set up, but there's a lot of older folks here. More than 183 some members, so we'll definitely push out that poll. If it's only open to Norfolk residents, I'm sure they'll answer.
It doesn't say who is open to, so I'm going to give it to everybody who wants it.
Perfect.
I'll make sure you guys get that.
No, thank you very much, General. Questions?
Any thoughts, questions? Sir.
Poll is only back. There is mention of the CQs we're talking about. We have regulations and guidelines. There's very few laws about lighting that we have out there, and the guidelines are you can use them or you're not using them. The regulations are not enforceable because we can't enforce a lot of the crimes right now. So even if we put it in code and say this is the code, you can't have a 4,000 gentleman light. The police department has done a lot with the sheriff and others. I have to go investigate all the lobbies. It's going to be hard for me to convince my guys. I've got to go out at night by being standing in front of a light and say, whoop, that's a 4,000. I'm writing him up for a citation. So it's almost enforceable. So the only way I can see to get around it, and I'm open to any great ideas that anybody has, is educate. It's educate everybody to know what they're doing. And it kind of like those, all of us older people, remember when it was don't let your dad kill himself by smoking, all the smoking programs and things like that when we were in the 60s and 70s, that, you tell your dad he's got to put his seatbelt on. Tell your dad he's got to stop smoking. You want him to live. I think it's that education portion, because the number one violators, even though I've talked a lot about the city and Dominion here, the number one violators by far is us. Go ahead, sir.
I'm from Colorado. We have light trespass law. If there's a light shining in your bedroom, you can have it. Stop it.
There's not that there, and I just was out at Colorado Springs. I think I was mad because I didn't bring my. I gave a speech at the graduation class of 2025. It's kind of neat to go back and see those classes and give a commencement speech. But I was walking outside, and I go, "Oh my gosh! Here's the part of now doing this and testing all these lights." I go, "That's 4,000 Kelvin." I'm like, "That's way too much light." And they were looking at me like I was some crazy guy. But if there is a trespass law, I'm going to look into that and see what we can at least propose to Jackie Glass and some of the others who are strongly behind us. And tell them about
it. We can't go into depth. I know. Chat with them.
Like the trespassing. You would see. I don't have all my pictures. One of the worst right now. And I've gone in and talked to the doctors five or six times, and they totally agree with me that their lights are too bright. They put them in these huge floodlights that are around 6,000 Kelvin, and the illumination is off the charts. It pegs my meter. And they did it because they got people breaking in a couple times, so they put those lights there. Nobody breaks in anymore, but they're light polluting all over. That's a great question. If you don't mind, I'm going to put that in. Can I have I look at Colorado, but if I have your number, I mean, if you want to share your thank you. There's a question in the back. Did I lose him? Did you have a question? Okay, my fault. Anyone?
I do have one. So, please. As far as the lights that you're talking about for the city of Melbourne, referring to the public streets, the sidewalks, what about parking lots that are owned by, like, the department stores? Does the city have any say over those lights?
They do through planning, and we've submitted to the planning commission, a set of guidelines that are dark sky friendly, but more importantly, they're by the Department of Interior. They were by the Department of Interior, and they were historic preservation has all looked at those and said, "Hey, we agree with these." They take the lights down to around 3,300 as the max level, but the good thing that I really liked, and I went, "Yay!" was they take the illumination down to almost. What we were talking about before, that the gas lighting one, where it's 1 to 2 lumens at 15 feet. Right now, in a normal light at your doorstep, if you go out and you look at it, you're going to probably see, especially if it's a LED fixture, you're probably going to see 5-6 lumens out at 15 feet. And the bad part about it is, and our award winner understands this, physics behaves like a wave and a particle, so it hits things and it bounces up. So even if you say, "Hey, I'm going to," as that one thing, "I'm going to cut the illumination because here," but if it's over illuminated, I'm reflecting light back up into the sky anyway. Mm-hmm. So we've got to think through all of these things. And it's not an easy answer, it's a complex answer, but it goes back to what are you designing the light to do? If you're designing it to be a red light, so I'm going to go out and I can be able to see at night on a ship, or I can be able to fly at night, you're going to find it a lot lower, a lot warmer, not a problem. If you're designing it to be able to see out to your car so you can get there or not, probably a little more light, but we can design it so that the pattern, the distribution pattern, gets to where it needs to be, as you saw that one light where it was spread, and not just in your face or in your eyes. But that's a great question. Thank you, sir. Anybody else? Please.
I had a question talking about like parking lots and cars.
Yeah, I didn't answer that one. I got to get back to it.
Okay. I was wondering, because over the past decade, there's been a large switch from warmer halogen bulbs to bluer LEDs that are much brighter in cars. Have y'all done any work to kind of regulate those cars with much brighter lights being on the streets? I know that can be much harder.
The brake lights, the blinking lights, the turning lights.
And the turning lights and just the regular lights. That's the one I was talking about.
Going up and down.
Yeah.
Opposing lights, they did the same thing. And here's where the science goes at it. And we would have probably all, sitting in the room 30 years ago, done the same thing. where is the most efficient LED light in color? Because it gives off huge illumination. It's at 6,800. 68 to 76 is the most efficient. Now, that's at 93% of turned efficiency. When I drop down to 3,200 or 2,200, I go to all a whopping 89, 87%. You know, so we're getting confused on what we're trying to go and get after. But your answer, I don't get to regulate. All I can do is try to educate and try to have a discussion with people to see what's the best. And I think we got to think through again, and this goes to combat tactics. I just don't go drop bombs or shoot bullets at places. I want to understand the effect I want on the enemy and the effect I want on the environment. And I think we should be doing the same thing, is what effect do we want for the light that we have and where we want it, when we want it, and how we want it. And I think that requires people who are designers. And that's the beautiful part of it. We can use artists with scientists to get the right thing. And I saw a little bit of that working with operators and scientists when I was in the operational test flying the F-22. We made changes to the airplane that the scientists didn't necessarily like because it wasn't as efficient. But guess what? It flew better. It did the things it was supposed to do better. And that's where it is. It's a trade-off between science and art. My opinion. Oh, and I'm going to finish your question. I forgot. I got running off. You're exactly right. We don't know. The city doesn't control. The planning commission sets guidelines, again, on what parking lots should be and how light they are. But most of them, are you ready? Who drives the lighting? Not usually the people. The who? Architects. They're architects a little bit, but they're architects that work for insurance companies. Because the insurance companies drives the rate of those buildings for insurance, and they don't want to get sued because you don't have bright lights in your parking lot. Someone gets assaulted. So, again, are you walking the dog or is the dog walking you? You know, it's that kind of thing where we get to go, what are we trying to do? How are we trying to do it? And who controls it? So, and the only reason I know that is I sat on when I retired from the Air Force, I went to work at USAA and I sat on the Actuary Committee as the chair of the Actuary Committee, and that's, you learn a lot about how insurance companies gamble in insurance and how they gamble, and it's all it is a bet that this other thing is going to happen, and we play the statistics to find out what that thing is going to be. Very interesting art and science. Don't go there. Don't go. Yes, sir?
So us astronomers using red lights, are we putting ourselves to sleep?
No, but you... Yeah, I don't know about you, but it was a pretty good joke. I don't know about you, but when I would sit in a ready room or a briefing room, we'd have red lights go off before I'd get out, and then you have the adrenaline of being in the airplane. But we'd always go, oh. We'd find ourselves going down and go, my gosh, you know, I'm a little tired than I thought. And I actually think that might be, I'm not the guys who brought that optometrist and some other guys for the ones that found that out. And a good friend of mine, Dave Evans, who graduated with me, who went into human factors optometry, one of the first guys to do that in the late 70s, early 1980s. In fact, this whole side story we talked about is I barely passed the color blindness test. And it's hard for me. I can usually get about just a little over half. You have to get over half to go through. And it has nothing to do with my eyes. I'm not colorblind. They tested the cones that I had, it's just that I had 88% rods and only 12% cones. So I see really good at night. I see really good at my peripheral vision out to that side, you know, way back on that side because the cones were at adult. And I see movement faster than other people. But camouflage has a greater effect on me. And the interesting test is they brought in a lady who was a painter and a designer. She was 97% cones. She could distinguish 600 shades. David wrote a paper on it. He thought Van Gogh may have been in that side because of the way he painted and what he did. So I don't know. Isn't the body beautiful? And I'm going to get out of you guys here and get you.
Excellent bird vision.
Yeah, it's a 5 foot point.
Okay.
Virginia Beach does have trespass laws here.
Okay.
I used it successfully against a gas station, against an apartment complex. Unfortunately, that was during the Cobra type, you know, full illumination, and the gas station did change the lights to full cutoff, but they were still very bright, but at least the direct illumination. So Virginia Beach does have trespass law. The issue is that their planning commission gets overwhelmed with the architect designing stuff, and then just, you know, get involved in everything and all the projects. They just can't monitor everything. What affects our astronomers is because of the LEDs are relatively full spectrum. Before, in the old days, the high pressure sodium, the low pressure sodium, the yellow lights, even the brighter ones, you had very narrow spectrums. So you get a filter for your telescope and pretty well knock out most of the light pollution, but you can't do that with LEDs. We're hurting for that.
You're exactly right. And when I talk to my friends, that goes over the.
For astronomy, it changes up.
Well, for astronomy and anybody who's trying to understand when you talk about light effects, I think that's a great point.
The other one, I know Norfolk does have some shorelines that are affected, but Virginia Beach is very sensitive. You might want to add it to your presentation if you get in this area. But turtles really screws up the maybe turtles going not to the water but towards the lights, because they would go towards the moon reflection off the water versus the city lights, and that really messes up. And that's a big sensitivity on why the boardwalk area did go with the full cutoff fixtures and lower things along the boardwalk. But that's about it. The hotels are still fighting that issue. As a point, I'm a board member for Indian River Plantation. Our community had designed a low-pressure sodium. It was a fundamental design. The issue with Dominion Power is, as those bulbs burn out, it was a lock-a-bolts thing. They would come out with a higher Kelvin thing, and they would start all of a sudden percolating. I said, why are they doing this stuff? They don't, you know, the workers just don't have the instructions. So you literally have to call. On every light pole, there's a number, an ID number. If you call them and report it to the city of Virginia Beach, they will have Dominion bring out the right Kelvin bulb, and we fight that all the time. We're 243 homes.
At least in Norfolk, and I agree with you, everybody should do that. We're finding that if you ask for a different color bulb, it goes to...
It's just apathy and knowing and, you know, getting people that care. And the last thing, prior years ago, I was the IDA liaison here at our club, and I had a presentation, and we actually got delegates to support a bill up in Richmond that got great support, and we lost on the committee. It was the signage people all along that their lobby group said, no, that's going to affect our revenue because we can't illuminate with full spectrum, and we want to, you know, make our signs look beautiful. And so they tabled the bill that we actually drafted up.
And you probably know better than I do, I've heard that there's been several bills that have made it all the way to committee, but none out of committee.
Yeah.
And none
killed the committee. The
challenge is, and this is where I'm asking, you know, I do this from an effects base. Mm-hmm. I go, if we change the law right now and we made it a $50 penalty, whatever penalty you want to do, I turn to the sheriff and the mayor's, and they go, you know what, we don't have the time to enforce that.
Here's the problem also. In Virginia, we have the Dillon Rule. I don't know if you've exposed that. Dillon Rule says that a local community can enact laws that aren't enacted at the state level. So as a result, it's trickle down is the only way it's going to happen. It can't be forced locally, because then Richmond will say, you can't, City of Virginia Beach, you can't do that. So that's the other reason we lost the bill.
And the other part I don't bring into these guys is we've now got 28 cities in Virginia, Charlotte, Richmond, that have groups like CRL that are starting up and going to make these presentations. A lot around D.C. in the area, but as far away as some of the smaller towns. And then we also have South Carolina, North Carolina who just joined us also. So it's about now 50-plus cities.
That's great.
And we're trying to push that. I applaud that, and we're going to try to continue to work on changing the laws and changing what I call the regulations and the guidelines. They should be there for people to go for reference. But I think this is more impactful because two things. One, you learn, and now you think about it when you go and you operate. And two, next time you see your commissioner or your councilman or your mayor, about half of you will say, hey, you know, what are we doing about our lights? Mm-hmm. So we're getting that out there. And it's interesting. Kenny Alexander told me the other day, he goes, you know, Joe, when you first came, you said, hey, I was going to get a petition. I put the petition up on the first night. We got 1,700 people in about 4 hours. Then I went and saw him the next day, and he said, don't do a petition. It's just going to drive the politicians crazy. It's going to we're not going to all believe it. It's going to take a long time. So I said, okay, I believe you. I trust you. Let's do that. You're going to work the issue, and he's been helping us. A week ago at Memorial Day when I gave the discussion down there at the Wisconsin, he came up to me afterwards and goes, hey, I kind of wish you'd rather done this petition. This would have been done. I get everybody all the time now telling me about how bad the Kelvin is, how bad the lights are, how bad the illumination. He goes, enough. You guys win. But he's won. Look, and he actually, for Norfolk, if you understand the way the council, he gets to help set the agenda. He gets to be on the agenda. But unless there's a tie vote, he has no vote. It's the council member. So that's what we have to do. But I appreciate what you're telling us. And if you know of a congresswoman or a state senator, state representative that is inclined to lead this way because of the contacts you have, please tell us. Because we'll gladly go give the brief. Or if you know of another organization you think would be worthy of us giving the brief, please reach out. I'm glad to do it. I'll come do it. All I would be doing is playing chess and beating my wife again. So that's.
We initiated a petition, and we got volunteers to sign up the petition. And that's when we gave you a delegate. The delegate wrote, help us write a bill, and then submitted.
We made it back that way. The one thing I'm glad we did it. We have some people in the group that really want to push hard and tell and be aggressive. I think the way this sticks and the way that at least the mayor and the council members in Norfolk, we're treating them with respect, and we're hoping they're treating us with the same respect, and we're talking about things that affect all of us, and then we should have that discussion. So that's where we're at.
Amen.
Okay. Good. Thanks, guys.
I'm on my way back to the other place. You guys have a great night.
Thank you.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't look like the weather's going to be very good for the next couple of days, although we have a professional here.
No, it's a lot of clouds, a lot of rain.
Video looks frozen.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's not just me. Not good. Oh.
Did we lose him?
Looks that way.
Yeah, it's probably here's the incoming test, too. They lost power inside the building.
Oh, interesting. Because of the storms? Is there storms coming? I don't know.
I'm not sure. Let's see if they're firing back up. Lost power. Zoom. Okay, they're booting the computer back up. I'm the bad genie. I have done no observing. I can't stay up late tonight. I need winter time. I need to be in bed by 10 o'clock. I'm in the wrong hobby because I cannot stay up. Sometimes my son has been like, can we take the telescope out? And I'll look, I'll be like, yeah, sure. Then it'll be 8 o'clock. And he's like, okay, I'm done. I'm going to bed.
Yeah, daylight savings doesn't help.
Yeah. As soon as that comes, I'm like, all right, I'm done till fall. I don't know what the summer sky looks like.
And part of the problem around here is that if you go out in the morning, it's morning dew. You know,
oh,
so
yeah,
if you don't have a dew shield,
Yeah. Every yeah. time it's like, oh, there's a cool comment in the morning, I'll like, yeah, I'll set up for, I'll set the alarm for 3, 4 o'clock. And then I'm like, no, I ain't getting up. Screw that. I don't even lie to myself anymore. It's like, yeah. More power to you. I know the guys that do it routinely. I don't know. I can't do it. I need my sleep.
Very important for
So now it's forcing them to update their Zoom. Yeah, it was an interesting perspective that presentation, because, you know, I've heard, you know, I'm aware of the Dark Sky Association, and you hear about light, you know, pollution. We think about it from, you know, how it affects the sky from seeing perspective, but I never really considered the effects on the wildlife, or even just our own body rhythms. That was pretty interesting, you know, because a lot of times you do something like, oh, yeah, that makes sense, and you don't realize all the effects that it has on other things.
I've heard about a lot of that with folks in Outer Banks, you know, down towards Manio because of the turtles and the this and that. And they're very, very specific on what lights can be built, where, how, and they'll explain it to you to the point it'll put you to sleep. Wow. So
I had no idea. I thought that was interesting when they brought that up. I had no idea that was like a thing that the, you know, and have that drastic effect on the turtles.
I think it's kind of interesting too, because I think it's a lot of mindsets that people have. I mean, some people want to conserve water, conserve their lighting, don't litter, you know, all this, you know, it's just a general conservation mindset. And a lot of people don't have that at all.
My wife is totally like the one of like, I don't care. I'll make everything bright. I want to, you know, like, safety. Yeah, she will just have no regard for any of that kind of stuff. Like, okay, I like environmentalists, all care. I don't want to be affected by anything. She gets mad at me because I usually have the opposite mindset. So we can clash on certain things.
Yeah, I've given up on several issues.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, there are battles that I will fight. I was like, I have to choose them selectively.
Pick and choose your hills, yes.
Yeah, I have to pick and choose, and knowing the ones that I choose, I'm still going to lose most of them.
We're back. You're back.
I hear you. I don't see you.
Oh, good. If it's pointing at me, you're not losing much.
No, okay. It's dark. Oh, your student is just black.
I get it. Hang on.
Oh, there you are.
Okay. Rich, since you're back here, would you like to go ahead and regale us with your treasurer's report?
I don't know if I would like to, but I will.
I'll settle for that.
Oh. All right. Too much. So we have about just over 15 grand in the general treasury. That's a $937 decrease from the following month. And that, of course, is across all of our accounts, 15 grand. So we have about 9,000 in our general fund. That's our money. And we have about $6,000 across our two scholarship funds. That's about to go down because, as Ben has said, checks in the mail, right, like 5 times to me today. The check is about to go in the mail, so $3,500. So really, in the we did not have many transactions this month. We had 2 big expenses. We paid our Astronomical League dues, which was $1,066. We're charged, everybody that's a member of the club, we also are enrolled in the Astronomical League, so you're a member there as well. There's dues associated with that, and the club pays those for you, so that's what gives you access to all the observing programs. The other expense was like $400 for these lanyard things that Jeremy bought. The money coming in was all scholarship money. We got a $500 donation from Georgie June's sister. She sends usually $250 every year to, and with a letter about how she appreciates how the club, you know, has memorialized and we keep, you know, continue Georgie June's legacy on. But this year she donated $500. So that was a little bit more than, and so that sets up well for the scholarship next year. We had two new members join in the month. So we, are up to 183 members at the moment, and that's about all I have. If there are any questions, please ask me now.
Can you send a letter with the board, a thank you letter? Scan that or PDF it or something? The thank you
yes.
letter?
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
Well, yeah, it's she said it's like a
or is it email?
No, she sends like a card, like a home, like a little card. So it would be tough to scan. I probably could.
That'd be awesome. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll entertain a motion to accept the treasurer's report.
Make a motion to accept the
treasurer's
report. All right. Excellent. That means I don't have to repeat it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
What happens if you don't accept my report?
Richard, the post office box was empty, by the way.
We'd rather not find out.
Appreciate it.
And Richard, the post office box was empty. Check it. Okay.
Awesome. Appreciate it, Ben.
Okay. Is Gabe online?
No.
Then I guess we're not going to have a secretary's report this evening.
No.
We don't even have to. We don't even have to move to wait. All right. Now that we're back in, Stephen, I saw you had your hand up during there, but our presenter vacated. I took a note of the link that you put in the chat, and I will send it to him.
Oh, good. Yeah. And for those that didn't see it, that's just in the town that I moved from a couple of months ago. I lived there, you know, for 32 years. We had the town building code address all this so that, you know, you kind of get it up front. If anyone's going to do anything, including municipalities and commercial or residential, they got to get a building permit first. So if you put the lighting code there, it's better than trying to fix it after the fact. And we've had good success. When I left there, it was still a Bortle 4 area, which is kind of where I live now. So they're doing pretty good for a much more congested area than where I live now. So
that's what I was thinking as well. I was like, can't do much about what's already there, but if you address the code, the building code for anything going on, that will address replacements and any kind of new construction. That makes the most sense.
And then there are things called sunset laws where you can go back and make people change things. That's much harder, but there you can do that too, but much better to put it in the building code regardless. So,
anyway. Yeah, public shaming and boycotts are also very effective elevators.
Thank you, Jeremy. Sure. I don't know if you heard that discussion earlier. It was a little sidebar here, but the challenge in Virginia is that we have a Dillon law, which does not allow localities to initiate new laws unless it's approved up in Richmond. So that's why the golden ring here in Virginia is to get your delegates and senators to support a bill that allows that to trickle down to the municipalities, the localities, because it can't go upwards, but it can go down. In any case.
So with that said, I recognize we're running dangerously close to running over.
Politics.
And yeah, this is, well, there's politics involved. It's at least not partisan politics, which is, I'm pretty sure is okay for a 501c3. That said, does there anyone have any other items of business for the club before we do the door prize?
Door prize.
And does anyone not have a door prize ticket?
So our guests have a door prize? Oh, our guests.
I thought I gave you one, did I not?
Jeremy,
yes, actually, that's a great point. I'm so sorry. I hesitate to ask everyone to go around the room because that usually takes about 20 minutes. But who do we have who's new to the club or are new to our meetings this evening? Holy cow! All right. Well, can I at least ask those who, if you're new to us tonight, please introduce yourself. And those of us who are more established members, I'm sure we will be happy to greet you.
Yeah, there you are.
Who else did I miss? Yeah, I'll point the camera this way. We'll start
over
here.
Who else does not have? Oh, there you go. I thought I saw another hand over here. All right.
Yeah, we'll start on that side.
Yeah.
How's it going, everybody? My name's Ethan. Jeff here invited me to come and be a part of y'all's meeting. I told Jeff earlier, my uncle, he was head of a planetarium down in Florida, so he would always be showing me how he programmed shows, you know, built things up, and would always be taking me out, and we would just be looking at stars and stuff. So, you know, space, stars, celestial bodies, it's always just been an interest of mine, so I decided to come out, you know, be a part of this.
We're
glad you did.
Wasn't Jeff Forkhammer, was it?
It was not.
It's a noble pursuit.
Welcome.
Awesome, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ojo. I don't really know too much about astronomy. I met this guy in the parking lot.
Well done.
Recruiting chair. Recruiting chair.
Well, I worked at the Chesapeake Planetarium 30 years ago, and I've been from Moffitt to Blackwell ever since. I do astronomy some back then, and married kids, no room for stuff. Now, you know, room again, so now I've started accumulating telescopes and joined the club, and, you know, here I am.
As one
does. Just make sure we understand. Yep. You're a new member and met somebody and brought them in to be a new member?
That's
amazing. That's amazing. Special.
Yeah, special. We should talk about
it. We should talk about it. Membership committee. All in favor, Chair? Yeah.
I'm sick of that.
So a great way to recruit people is not to assign them chair, a committee chair on their first meeting. Wait a second. Or third. I don't want to scare you off too quick. I think we have some visitors from the Norfolk Astronomical Society. Did I hear that?
Yeah.
Dennis
Rowley, lifelong interest in astronomy, physics degree from the University of Florida, way back. I didn't know Newton personally.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm Barry, and I retired a few years ago and got into astronomy at that time. So it's a fairly new hobby for me.
Well, retired from NASA, designed space missions.
Very
awesome.
Good. Wow.
Cool. Well, we're glad you guys decided to join us, especially since you did I overhear you say the Norfolk Astronomical Society is on a little bit of a hiatus.
On a bit of a hiatus. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll happy to chat because I know you sound interested in what we're doing, especially with our outreach events and other events.
I used to do outreach when I was with TCC Astronomy Society. We go to Waterside, and we had some great. You know, there was a bluegrass festival one time, and Saturn was up, and we had our C8s out there, and that was a heck of a night. But then there were other nights when you have the passers by say, hey, you want to look at the moon? No. You know, it's like, how can anybody say no?
Yeah.
But whatever. So it is what it is.
Well, hopefully we can entice you to join us. We're not selfish. You can join.
Well, I see what you have in your kitty, thousands of dollars. So your dues must be, what, $100?
Oh, less than $25. And that includes your Astronomical League membership.
All right.
Generous donations for your
bank robbers or something.
Not quite.
Well, we don't talk about it.
Right, obviously. Recording's in progress. All right. Did I see a hand?
Yeah. Chris, I've always had an interest in astronomy, going all the way back to my kindergarten days at just Planetarium, but I guess last year or so I've really dug deep into, you know, learning more about it and kind of watching some of the YouTube meetings on YouTube and thought I'd come out and see it in person. So.
Well, glad you did. And I have it on good authority that just the planetarium is going to be reopening soon, so you'll have the opportunity.
Oh, they found somebody. They found?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's me.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to, so on that subject, I'm sorry not to distract too much, but we had some discussion on the Groups.io about the Rubin Observatory kickoff. If I can get the dome up and running in time, I'm going to try and host a first light party at the 23rd, which is a Monday, because that's apparently the time.
Just remember. members, we have a planetarium here that once in a while we go down and see a show after a meeting. So pretty nice show.
I had called the city to see if I could volunteer at the planetarium 2 months ago. And I said, there's nothing going on. We don't have anything. So if you need anyone to do stuff work for you or whatever.
I appreciate that. I'm working to see what I need to do. I'll know more by next month. So, I mean, I'll know more by next week, but I'll be able to share it. I know you just joined us.
Yeah, I was Tuesday at the boardwalk. My name's Olivia. I go to school here. My teacher recommended joining the club. I've loved space and stuff since I was a kid. I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama. So had space camp
space
growing
great.
Up.
That's
so,
awesome.
Cool. Space. Yeah, and I hope to continue to join. Thank you.
Welcome.
Know a little bit about you, but if you'd like to share anything more than your amazing essay, we'd love to hear it.
I'm Mia again. Hi. I first got into astronomy, and that is the eighth grade earth science class during COVID. When I first learned about stars, and I was like, this is really cool. Like, I grew up here in Virginia Beach, and you can't really see the stars, so I didn't know that you're supposed to be able to see the Milky Way. I didn't know that. When I found that out, I was like, that's really cool. I want to know more about that. And so ever since then, I just kept going with it. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. So thank you very much to all of our newcomers. I hope we'll see you again for our visitors from the North Astronomy Society. I hope you will choose to join us again. Come join us at some of our outreach events. We'll be happy to chat with you afterwards. But I did promise, one, to try and keep us on time, and we haven't. And two, I promised a prize. Again, anyone not have a ticket? All right. So I was hoping to have a light meter, but it didn't arrive in time. I thought that would be appropriate. So the next best thing is, of course, a light that is not just a nice red light, but also tunable. So it adjusts in brightness. I actually thought it was a Barlow, so... Well, it's still
all right.
The box. The box was the. I thought it was bringing the 2-inch Barlow. Apparently, it's.
Oh, okay.
This is actually thematically way more appropriate. But, it's a pretty cool one. Or really warm in the sense that it's odd that we go with calling it warm when it's actually cooler.
Yeah.
And all right. So if everyone has their ticket, I'm going to say that. Actually, no.
Yeah. Draw the one.
Whoever I did just draw, Drew.
I mean, draw yourself.
All right. Last three numbers should be enough.
112.
That's actually the one I had originally drawn. No kidding.
112.
112?
That one's mine.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I don't have
to. It's okay.
I can do it again. No, I feel bad.
You just want to draw numbers?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm dead serious. 112 was the one I pulled out before I decided to have you call.
But I already have a scholarship. I'll do someone else.
I think she should keep it. All right. Thank you so much. All right. With that said, and recognizing you, please feel free to take a look at the... our dynamic sun kit while it's still there before I close it up. But unless anyone has any other items, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll
start
it. Third.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
All right. We have a motion to adjourn, and it's been thirded. Any discussion? No? Okay. Any all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned. See you.